Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to another episode of Coffee and Benefits. How you doing this evening, brother?
Man, I'm doing good. My head's sweating from my tinfoil koofy.
You all right?
Yeah, man, just being flooded and overwhelmed with a plethora of different information regarding a lot of the things that's been happening with this COVID-19 or coronavirus, or as someone said, they now done nicknamed the joint Rona. Oh man, yeah. So
they done named it Rona. Yeah, we've been flooded with the information, and like me and my wife were saying, like, because yesterday we went to Walmart, right?
Right.
So when we go in Walmart, people in there just shopping casually, and I'm looking at people's carts to kind of see what they're buying and stuff like that. And so when I go down to the aisle where the water is, like, only thing that's left in there is Dasani or Deer Park or something like that. Seems like people just not messing with those two, even during a crisis. But, and all the aisles with toilet paper and those types of toiletries and stuff was completely empty. But one of the things that my wife was saying, that it's kind of like a monkey see, monkey do syndrome, right?
Yeah.
Because they're making such so much about it that people run out and they buy all of this stuff, that they wasn't even buying all of this stuff when we had the hurricane and stuff like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you go and you see that all of toilet paper is gone, all of the water is gone, like dry goods, like beans and rice and ramen noodles and all of that stuff, it's just been
depleted. Yeah.
And you know, we live outside of the city limits, right? So I'm about an hour away from 45 to an hour from the two biggest cities around here.
Right.
And so when we go to the city yesterday, that's what we seen. You know what I'm saying? Like, on the streets, it doesn't seem to be
chaos,
all crazy, and people staying away from you. But I felt that within my own self, where I'm kind of more cautious with regards to people and touching stuff and things like that. So, yes, it's done got crazy out there.
Yeah, and it shows you the. It's a strong indication of mass programming.
Right.
Because we don't even know if it initially started off that everybody was just buying water and toilet paper until they start, oh, the people are selling out water and toilet paper. And that will make a person say, oh, they is? They really is?
Then everybody goes and runs and grabs and all of that stuff, man.
We need to go and get water and toilet paper.
Yeah.
For the Muslim and the non-Muslim people, it's quite simple with us. Extend your fitra. Extend jah.
Yeah.
We should never be like, we ain't got no extend jah. And increase your fitra. You know, you might got to wrap that joint all the way around.
Yeah, but see, my wife is of those that likes a coupon, and so we have like not loads of stuff, but because she coupons and she'll get a lot of stuff for a little bit, like a lot of stuff we do have kind of in access.
Right.
But some stuff you can't get. The hard part is this: for the people who have to stay home and miss work, and they can't work from home, Then when it comes to like getting the necessities in terms of food and things like that, you're kind of short because you still go out and that stuff is gone. You know what I'm saying? And because you can't work, you don't even have the money to get the stuff when it does. And as far as I know, they don't have a fund to give you, or like any of these agencies are going to make sure that you're able to get these type things and stuff like that. And so that's one of the downsides that I see to that little quarantine thing that they're doing.
But see, DC kind of, I mean, our city has always marched to a different beat from a different drum. And
Right.
that's what makes DC so unique, in that the things that come out of the White House doesn't really impact how DC functions. So our government, the non-essential part of the government shut down, the people still getting paid. I
Right.
work at a public charter. I'm still getting paid. Our grocery stores, a lot of our grocery stores isn't depleted. A lot of our grocery stores got ahead of the curve, like, hey, you can only get two cases of water apiece, two Lysol products, regardless, mismatch whatever Lysol product you get. You can only get two, and you can only get like three chicken products. Like, you're not going to come in there with all your wealth and buy up everything
Yeah.
and sit on it. Like, no, we're going to ration this stuff out, and we're going to, but, and also the produce aisle is pumping. I mean, it's
Yeah.
pumped up. Ain't nobody getting no broccoli, no kale, no string beans, no none of these things. And if they don't have that, then you might need to, man, learn how to, man, mess with turnips and
Yeah.
radishes. You got to, yeah, this is a time where people really need to, really now is the time. I think that in the course of years after years, there are cruxibles, or there are points in time where people can actually stop and think and analyze how they move forward. Like, now I'm on the merengue powder, the goji, the stuff that all the healthy stuff that people been neglecting for years. Now people are understanding how important dieting is, your nutrition, your immune system, because it seemed like this thing is really attacking people with a compromised immune system. And it's
Yeah.
on different levels. Some people got it, hey, I feel fine. Some people got it and they're in the hospital. All that diabetes, all anything that a person is already dealing with, that's what your immune system is really staving off or fighting. So now it's a time for us to really, man, be conscious about a lot of things, how we live our life, our hygienical practice. And even on the spiritual note, that this can be a time where the people get closer to Allah and have to walk on Allah, but in a rational sense, meaning
Yeah.
you still got to tie your camel down, you still have to look at the evidences, you still have to follow a certain protocol. You know what I'm saying? And a lot of times, a lockdown and a quarantine wouldn't even be necessary if the people was just moving in a precautious way. It's almost like a teacher. The students will come into class, and if the kids are in there talking low, but they still getting their work done and they carrying themselves with some sense of responsibility, then the teacher ain't gonna be like, hey man, shut up, get your work done. You're doing your work, you're not disrupting the people next to you. Cool, I'm gonna let that slide because they being productive. But it's once you look and you say, okay, you see we got this work to do. You see what's going on, and y'all out here nothing like that. Now you harming other people. So
Yeah.
now, since you can't be self-governed, we're going to govern you.
Yeah.
You know, so in a lot of cases, and in a lot of those cities in the US that you see it's really hit, are the cities that really have the most chaos in it. New York, Philly. I don't know Baltimore. For some reason, I haven't been hearing too much about Baltimore.
Right.
LA is talking about doing it now. New Jersey is either doing it or talking about doing it. Chicago, you know, you can't really control Chicago because them dudes gonna bust back at the army. Whatever the army got, the Joker in the parking lot got exactly what the army got. So that'll be a hard thing to kind of control. But this is a time of self-reflection, man, and just looking at things from a different perspective.
Yeah, but see, that's one of the things that I was going to say is that this is a time where you have to not be so self-consumed and only thinking about yourself, because a lot of people are negligent with regards to, like, even this quote-unquote self-quarantine, right? Like, me and my wife say that we kind of quarantine ourselves anyway, because, like, we're in the house. We don't really go to many places. And so, you know, we're not around everybody. But some people, when they say don't go to restaurants and don't gather this or don't gather there, then don't do those things, right? And just think about it, because that'll be the quickest way to get a handle on the stuff, because they're trying with these incentives or initiatives, rather, to, you know, get rid of this stuff. And we have to be collective in that. You know what I'm saying? Just like you pointed out, where you're already supposed to be, especially Muslim, with regards to having a certain level of hygienic practices, that's one thing. But, you know, this is the way that we all have to move, like, until things get different.
Right. And see, this also shows you another side of Islam, where it's not just like about spirituality, or that Allah sent the Quran and with the establishment of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. It wasn't just about a spiritual transformation. Rather, it was a holistic transformation, and included in that is societal standards and conduct as far as how we are to treat one another and observing the rights of one another. And one of the things that, for whatever reason, clearly sticks out in the Sunnah is observing the rights of the streets and the roadway. Not hanging out, gathering in the streets, or even not being places where haram stuff is happening and occurring, and being modest and being mindful. A Muslim, whenever he steps outside his home, he has to understand that he's in a battlefield. He's in a state of war going on outside, so he has to have a set destination, going from point A to point B, point B back to point A, from point A to point C, to point C to point A. This is a time in which, you know, we need to really take a look at a lot of these things, like the hygienical practices. Also, how some of the Salaf came with different medicine practices and learning how to quarantine and things of that nature. Even as far as if it's a land with a plague, then whoever's in that land, stay in that land. And whoever is trying to go to that land, to keep away. You got to contain certain stuff. You know, right. And a lot of the practices, believe it or not, a lot of the practices of government, mainly Greece, the Greek and Roman political system, and a lot of the laws that are passed are actually based on Islam. I think they said in either in the Congress Library, or it's somewhere where they actually have a book where the Europeans actually wrote a book and said that Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam was one of, if not the greatest lawgiver for society.
Right, right. That's a fact. That's a fact. Know? But that point you just made too about not being in the streets and stuff like that and protecting the streets, that's a very, very key point for the Muslim. And one thing also that I would add too, man, is that when communities come with a collective agreement with regards to how to handle a situation, it's not for the people, man, to run on social media and then try to downplay them with regards to that. How when they asked about shaking hands, and then I believe it was Sheikh Sulaiman al-Ruhaili, Hafizullah. And he says that, you know, right now would be a good would be the time to leave it off. And that's a
Right.
paraphrase, leaving off
Right.
shaking hands due
Right.
to this. And the salams and giving the salams is sufficient. Or with regards to closing the messages during the congregational prayer and so on and
No.
so forth. These and this comes from the Sharia, right? With regards to repelling harm, right? When a harm outweighs a benefit, right? Those are from the
Right.
legislation. And people have to have enough taqwa of Allah that when these communities make these types of decisions, that they're looking out for the
Of
well-being of,
everyone, the collective. And someone spoke out against that or something?
You know how social media is, man, where they'll come and they'll say some goofy stuff. Like I even seen one group of people praying separately, right? Where they're doing the quote unquote congregational prayer because the question was posed to Sheikh Mohsin Al-Abed, Hafidhullah, about the people praying in the masjid, but everybody is praying separate. And would that be considered congregational prayer? And the Sheikh, he says, no, they actually only pray individually, right? So you'll have people, you know, saying like, why are they closing the masjids? We should have just trust in Allah and this, that, and the fourth, right? But while you're saying a true statement, the intention behind it is false, right? Because you sit there and you say, we're just gonna have trust in Allah, and then the sick people come into the masjid, and then they infect a multitude of people, right? And then after that, it becomes, why didn't somebody stop them? They should have closed that masjid. They should have did this. They should have did that. When those initiatives were taken in the very beginning to even stop this from coming. So
Because,
now that's one thing. Go ahead.
see, and actually, I was about to really start getting back into this book. Oh my goodness, Fatul Majid. And me and the brother Sunni aided me tremendously in helping me to translate certain chapters, which I only was able to do two, two point one chapters. But one of the ones I was able to complete was the book about or the chapter concerning fearing the plan of Allah. And in it states that the believer worships Allah upon three pillars, and that he's in between these three states, having hope, having fear and the love of Subhanahu wa Ta'ala. But even in that hope, there's this thing called a far-reaching hope, or you just foolishly hoping in Allah. So that people tend to lean one way or another, either in total fear or in total hope, and just, oh, I could jump off a cliff. I'm gonna say Bismillah and it's gonna be all good. Or are people fearing the law so much that, oh no, I'm not going to go outside because it's right there at my door. Now we should have trust and reliance in the law, but we can't ignore the other ayat, the other signs of Allah that Allah is showing us in the earth. You don't walk in a volcano, nor do you try to spark up a volcano you with a bonfire on the side of it. No. You have to take the necessary precautions, think well of the people, and keep it pushing. Because if we're in a state of emergency, and the people say it's best for everybody involved because we don't want the people to end up with infectious diseases or things of this nature, then what we're gonna do is we're gonna shut the masjid down till we get more information and we know. No, you gotta trust in the law. Ask the people of Saudi Arabia, and all them cases over there, people who not caught it, whether they should trust in the law. Ask the plenty of Muslims who have died from various sicknesses and diseases and ailments about their trust in the law. Trust in the law is one thing, but what's written and the reality of the situation, they all go hand in hand, and the Muslim has to be cautious and take every precaution every time he step outside his house in times of ease and in times of hardship.
See, but you gotta take this into account too, that a lot of people have an understanding with regards to Islam in a theoretical manner, right? They don't understand the practicalities of it, right? Because that's how a lot of us was reared in our previous religions, mainly Christianity, that you have this blind and unwavering faith in light of what's presently in front of you, like the reality of what's in front of you right now contradicts what it is that you hold on to as a belief, right? And so when a lot of us enter into Islam, we have still hold these concepts and ideals, right? So a lot of it is just pure theoretical. And when it comes to the practicality of it, that simple hadith about trusting in Allah and tying your camel shows you the reality of what having taqwa is. It's just not the simple belief, right? That if I go in here to pray and I don't tie my camel, that my camel will be here when I get back, mm-hmm. right? You trusted in Allah to protect it, and you took the means of it, right? Therefore, when you come back from the salah, your camel will still be there, right? And so that's why you have these people making these statements, when in reality, they don't actually trust in Allah, because if they did, they would take the means. It's just like one of the Athar with regards to when the plague broke out in Syria and the companions they met at the road, and he told them that it was a plague in Syria. So he turned around and he went back. The companion asked him, "Are you fleeing from the Qadr of Allah?" He says, "Nah. I'm freeing from the Qadr of Allah to the Qadr of Allah," right? If I go back here and I die, then it was decreed for me, right? So the people have to understand things in their proper context, man. And that's one of the saddest things that you see with a lot of the Muslims, is they don't have a good practical understanding of the deen, how to put it in play. So, no. But let's go ahead and get into our topic for the night. And
it kind of blended in together, though, a little bit. Now, but no.
There's two posts that I want to try to cover. Because in our last podcast with Kareem Hafizullah, we touched on the subject of our issues, right? However, there's another part that we can kind of touch on as well. All right, so I'll just read the post and then we'll go from there. So a brother, he says on Facebook, "You have Arabs, West African, East African, Asians, along with Hispanics, Hispanic Muslims, who solely focus on their own issues. My question is that all these group of people have their own scholars and communities, and they focus on their issues under the umbrella of Islam. However, if African Americans were to do the same thing, it would be labeled nationalism. Why the double standard?" And that ends the brother's post. So In talking or discussing this subject, with regards to the African American Muslim, we want to ask three questions. So the first one is that the actual reality that if African Americans say that they want to focus on their issues, then they are labeled as nationalists. That's
Facts.
number one. number two, what is African American Muslims' issues, right? That's number two. And number three would be why aren't there any African American scholars in their communities? All right, that'll be number three. All right, so if you want to start off, that's fine, or I can start off.
To the first one, it's facts. As far as if ever we want to send a scholar over or have someone go over there and reach the level of being a scholar, or even not even a scholar, even if it's just a student of knowledge to come back and to focus on our issue, a high caliber student of knowledge. And if he focuses strictly on our issues, then it's nationalism.
All
And
right, so hold on for a second. So to the first question about if that's the reality, that if black or African American, whichever one you want to use, say they want to focus on their issues, then they become national. That's nationalism,
now.
right? So we concur that that is true,
Yeah.
right? Because we hear it and we see it. So now you're going to go into why do you think that's the case?
How could I phrase this? I think it's because we are the probably the last group of people who don't really have a collective sense of identity that's deeply rooted in a tradition that doesn't extend from slavery. So,
That
no,
finish
go. So, I think that, okay, I think that that makes us susceptible to any outside influence. Yeah. Go.
so I was gonna ask like what's the pro and the con of that, right? Because to say that, and that's why I think it's important for us to put at least in our opinion what our quote unquote issues are, right? And then that way it becomes easier for us to say that someone from another community trying to address this issue may not have the knowledge and the understandings on how or why these issues are even important to us as African Americans, right? Because quite naturally, so we'll take, for example, the issue of Zina, just as an example. How we deal with the Zani, in terms of in the African American community versus how they may deal with a person who does that within a Pakistani community, for example, may be totally different, right? But the issue in and of itself is a common issue, right? It happens in both communities, right? So, that wouldn't be a particular issue where, if we had a sheikh, for example, that was from Pakistan, he couldn't say This is how you deal with this as a community, as an individual, so on and so forth, right?
But the thing is, it's nuances to it. Because even though we might all have the same issues, we all don't have the same cultural norms that other people do, and customs and minds, a collective mind state as to why people do what we do. The Spanish man, the Puerto Rican isn't going to think like a Mexican. On
Right.
the outside looking in, oh, they all Spanish. But there are cultural differences between the two. There is lineage and foundational things into the mental genetic makeup as to how the two think. Dealing with the Mexican, I mean, think about it like this. Dominicans or Puerto Ricans are in essence like almost like Dominicans, Puerto Ricans, and Cubans, but Cubans have a certain trait that Puerto Ricans may not, that Dominicans may not.
No, that's a fact.
So in order to address a problem, you have to understand its root causes. Like for instance, anybody could get sick, but a lot of times when the doctor asks, he's going to trace how did you get sick with this particular thing? Because just riding, piggybacking off the COVID 19 or the COVID-19. And I'm not saying that this is this, but the flu. The flu isn't just the flu. It all has some of the same characteristics, but there are so many different strands and variations of the flu that not all, one medicine that might work for this flu may not work with this one. What may work with this one may not work with that one. So we all have cultural differences that, in order to address the issue, you have to be able to understand the cultural significance behind why things is the way it is. We know what the what is, but we have to understand the whys and the how. Because if that's the case, then the African American woman is the same as a Pakistani woman. You know one woman, you know them all. They have the
Right.
same fundamental basic makeup and have the same kind of issues to a certain degree, one less than another, but they're different. Because to say that our issues is the same as everybody else's issues is to say that we're all the same people. We ha all have the same issues. And if that is the case, then what's the problem with us having an African American scholar like everyone else does?
Okay, so now, as far as I and I pointed that out in the last episode, that I see it as not necessarily a one-step solution, right? And being naive to think that, not even naive, but just using that generic term that Islam is the solution, right? While it is the solution, as you pointed out, there are nuances to it, right? And so within that, there are people that have to come in who understand what's happening on the ground. And what I mentioned in the last episode is that when you and I go out into the communities, we see ourselves in our communities, right? And we understand what'll fix it, right? We understand that, we see that, and so therefore we want to give it to the people, right? And that's not an exclusion of anyone else. This is my community. Right. So therefore, I want to focus on what's affecting my community from an Islamic standpoint. That's what I want to do. And I want the freedom to do it without any kind of labels on that. Right. And that's why I brought up that point about understanding the Muqasid of the Sharia, the point of the Sharia. And then within understanding that, you can go out and fix your communities. Any community, right? But I do think that at the forefront of it or in participation with it, it needs to be people from within those communities, right? And that's what happens when you go over to Medina University, for example, and you study. You've gone over there with the intent on coming back to your prospective people, right? And disseminating proper and correct Islam, right? So from one respect, I understand it, and I think there has to be people within those communities that have more than a basic education with regards to Islam, right? Whether it's a student of knowledge or a scholar. One of the funny things that I do see is that when it comes to African Americans specifically, the West in general, they have this notion that they can't be any scholars in the West, right? And we know that that time has ended now because we got a few sheikhs now. Oh, yeah, that was a joke, brother. But they have that notion that there can't be any scholars in the West, and that if he's African American, he's definitely not a scholar. But I say to that man that sometimes you have to not pay attention to it, right? You have to not pay attention to the noise of the naysayers, man. Because in one respect, if you're calling to that which is correct, then what do you care that if someone doesn't agree with you, right?
Let me interject for a second. A couple of little quick points. One, I need to start writing my stuff down. one is, and this is a hard truth, but we collectively have a low self-esteem. That anytime someone reaches a status that the people feel like that person is either undeserving of or can't reach, is hated upon, is questioned, is doubted. We, anytime someone, the cream rises to the top, there's always this crab in a barrel mentality where they'll pull it down. They'll pull it down. They'll diminish your accomplishments. They'll say no, no, no. And some of it is from a pure jealousy, envious standpoint. Well, why him and not me? I'm better suited for this. Or nah, he ain't like that for real, for real. No matter what a person does, most of the hatred of our people openly comes from our people, which is an issue in and of itself that we have to address, is that the fact that we're content with being low-hanging fruit. Another thing is, in regards to our people, we're the only people that are shamed, collectively shamed, into saying our people. We're the only groups of individuals who we can't have, like, within the collective, our own individual anything, but we're, oh no, Islam is global. You don't hear this coming from the Hispanic sector, to the best of my knowledge. Nah, you're not Hispanic, you're not Latin, you're Muslim. No, you're
no, but see, that's why I was saying you have to get to the point where you don't care about what someone else says, especially when you know that you're standing upon truth. And this issue that we're discussing if you really take a step back and you look at it, it's an American issue, right? Because if you have a black person and a white person, and the black people want to celebrate the black person for the accomplishments that he may have achieved, right? On the opposite side, then the question becomes, well, what about me, right? Because if you're celebrating, and I'll just get more specific, right? And the reason why I'm getting specific is because this is something that was brought to me one time, right? And this is prior to me really even knowing Tar Heel, for example, right? And just as a disclaimer, right, this isn't an endorsement of a particular person or anything, right? It's just something that actually happened to me. So the brother comes and he tells me that Tahir was appointed a seat at the Prophet's Masjid and the first American on top of being African American to be given this honor and so on and so forth, right? And then he comes in the same breath and then he says, but what difference does it make that he's black and this and that and this and that, right? And so, but the person who's telling me this, he's white, right? And so he, in his mind, celebrating him from that perspective makes it about race, right? Like he can't eat if I'm proud of him because of that accomplishment, and I acknowledge the fact that he's black, then I'm being racist, right? I'm being nationalistic, right? I only care about my people, right? But for example, if he was a Somali or we were in the Somali community, and then he said that this is the biggest scholar in Somalia, right? He's done reached a level that no Somali has ever reached, right? It'll be no problem with that. The problem within our country, because it's so fragmented and broken up into different ethnicities and races, those feelings are always surface, right? As if I'm stepping on you, as if we can't be proud of our people for any numerous of reasons simply because we are Muslim, right? And as you pointed out, no one else has to do that to the point where they have to separate themselves or make an excuse for why, when, where, or what, right? He Somali, he's our scholar, right? These are Somali scholars. These are Asian scholars. These are Pakistani scholars, right? But then if we say that this is an African American scholar or a black scholar, it becomes a question. A question mark becomes on it. And then, like you say, or the brother pointed out in his post, that we get grouped with this, right? And that's why I say it just comes to a point where you don't give ear to
Right
what they are
now,
saying, right?
if I can interject, I'm picking up your lingo too. you doctor feeling me, man. Pause. no, but oh my goodness. But no, but that's the whole thing, though. Is that we can't give it to everything on a layperson level, but whenever, but now we're talking about people with influential platforms who kind of group think tank for the masses of their adherents that are actively working against each other. regardless, like, for instance, as I said, African Americans, we are the most accepting people and we give everybody their props. Like when I first saw that Umar Quinn was white, I was like, oh, all this time this a white guy spitting this fire the way he's spitting this fire. Hey,
Right.
or regardless, whatever else, basketball court, oh, the white guy got moved. We can acknowledge and appreciate everyone else but us. So what that does is it creates an imbalance because now you'll have people who will naturally, because I have done this. I have been in a neutral debate, hearing two people debate. And when I feel like the overwhelming people are ganging up on the minority, that will swing my sentiment. Even though I may not be defending their point, I'm going to hold y'all just ganging up now. Not like, hold on. So there is that sentiment and that we kind of do have that underdog that we love a great underdog story. So if it's, oh, it's not about race. It's not about that. It's not about that. That talk only comes down when it is us. Okay, we're all American. Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam was Arab, but he was Quraysh.
So, but I mean, to me, I think it's important, in two respects, man. One, from one respect, it lends encouragement and motivation to those younger generations, right? Where they can see that they have, and I always talk about that, man, actually having tangible examples, right? Where you can go and you can draw from, right? So it's one thing to read about the Salaf, right? And we look at their high stations. One that comes to mind, he wasn't a companion, but Atab bin Rabah was a freed slave. I want to say he was Habeshi, Ethiopian. And during the Hajj season, the ruler at the time made it so no one could give fatawa during the Hajj season except Atab bin Rabah, rahimullah, right? And so it's one thing for you to read about this and to say, like, you know, he was a free slave, he was African, and draw on these experiences to say that you can get to a high level and become a great ulama, right? And then there's actually seeing it from yourself, where you have within your lineage, in your line, people who were people of knowledge and people of virtue, right? But when you only see it from the outside, you kind of get the feeling that because you used to have, I know I used to have this feeling as a kid that one of the reasons why I wasn't quote unquote Muslim enough, right? Because it didn't act like the Arabs, right? Well, I wasn't Arab. So there was only a certain level of Islam that I could have, right? And so it's important that you have those examples, right? Actual people of knowledge that you can see and that you know. And it says to you that you're able to ascend and gain certain levels of knowledge and prestige and status and so on and so forth, right? So, but you also, we also know the reality of being like a Hezbi or having Asabiyah or whatever like that. And oftentimes that even gets attached to you from those outside entities, man. Like we pointed out, man, if you go into the quote unquote hood and it's all black people there, right? Those issues that we are talking about are community. That's what's going on in the ground. So you can't say that if I decide to give precedence to what's going on in my community, that I'm being any kind of way tribal or nationalistic or whatever the case may be. So my advice again would be not even to lend ear to that, man. Now, if we want to talk about who's actually a scholar and who's not, then that can be up for debate. But the idea of there can't be or they won't be or whatever, then I think that's just really being, being naive and.
But once again,
and goofy, quite frankly,
we might
man.
Be the last people that I'm aware of, that I know of. And I don't know a lot, and I'm not aware of a lot. So I'm not speaking of absolutes in this. But who have no foundation collective identity to the point where whenever we say black, someone outside the community say, hey, man, that ain't right. But you don't say that towards a Hispanic. You don't say that towards whenever Ethiopia get to talking about the Ethiopia, the Eritrean, the Somalian. One time I made a mistake and said, man, y'all like the same people. No, we're not. Blood has spilled this, that, and the third. And I had to check myself. I said, you know what? You're absolutely right. I had to check my and say, you know what? You're right. I'm speaking about an experience, not just from a textbook thing, but living that experience. You can't rationalize that type of stuff. We got one of our beloved brothers, Abdullah, whose family was in Libya.
Mm-hmm.
We can't really speak to that.
Right. I remember the day we did.
Remember the eight veins that popped out his head and it looked like one was like you could just bust that vein like a pimple. I had to check myself and say, man, we can't really speak to that issue because we didn't live it. Sometimes blood calls the blood. And even with that, push that aside. How could another group in the United States not understand why, as African American, we won't feel a sense of pride, not arrogant pride? Because when we shine, we don't really shine to do to one other people. We just sometimes want to say, hey, man, we won this one. We got this one. Sometimes we just want to do a collective high five and move on. You know, we over here marginalized. We have a whole thing. So any sense of a singular achievement is like one for the whole team. Sometimes we just want to, but when others weigh in, that's what makes it sometimes turn into Hisbee. That's what sometimes now it's like, man, why you got a problem with this? Oh, man, I'm just saying we all people. No, we're not all people, because if we really start looking at it and breaking it down, we can't be all people in one area, but in all these other areas, we're not one people. Here's the oh, man, now you. Sometimes just let us get our little thing off and move on like every other race and ethnicity and all this type of stuff. Nobody's, the Koreans do them. The Japanese do them. The Chinese do them. But let African Americans say, hey, man, I'm about to go ahead and do this for my community, the people in my community and my, you know, because we right now we're behind. We're lacking everyone else.
But is again, and I'll just go back to it, is that you just got to stop listening to it, because and you have to, when you realize that that's an American thing, right? That's And that's who really has the issue with it, right? Because if you went back to the scholars and you said that I want to deal with the issues of my community, he's going to say, tafadl, go ahead, right? Because why wouldn't he? What would be the problem in that, right? That is the actual purpose that you give dawah to your people, right? That doesn't mean it's an exclusion of anybody else. That if you're not African-American or Black, then don't come in this masjid. Ain't no one saying that, right? But how in the world do you expect to be, have a masjid in an African-American community, 100% Black, and then when you talk about addressing that issue, you'll have an issue with that, right? When you go to, you can go to Masjid al-Haram, Masjid al-Nabawi, and when you look in there, they have lessons in Urdu, they have lessons in African, they have lessons in Arabic, they have, why, right? Because people come from all over the world, right? And they have a particular person who's able to give dawah to them in their prospective languages, right? Now, if I went over to the Urdu section and I said to them, like, man, y'all can't, you can't focus on just the people who speak Urdu because that'll be nationalist. They go up, they probably beat me with their shoes.
Now, check.
Like,
now,
get out of here, man.
I'm going to give you an example because, right? Once again, when we talk about African-American, we're not talking about a monolithic people. We're talking about different subcultures and subsects and all this other type of stuff. But two quick examples. I remember attending Jumu'ah at the Salafi Masjid. Wallahi, the brother made 1 to 6. Nah, I ain't going to exaggerate it because I said wallahi. Like 1 to 2 khutbahs about Tahir Wyatt coming back. Oh, he has his doctorate. He's going over there.
Right.
And just went and on a whole khutbah about a refutation. He made 2 khutbahs and refutation of Tahir Wyatt. And guess what? He just advertised him because nobody really knew he was back or coming back or that he got his doctorates or nothing. People was like, oh, he has his doctorate. Let's go see what he's talking about. Whether you're pro, con, neutral, whatever the case may be. But he spent this whole joint going on him. And another thing is too, even as it relates to our different cities. DC is so uniquely different from Philly. Philly is so uniquely different from New York. New York is different from Chicago. Chicago is different from LA.
Right. But even in those little things, right? You're telling me it doesn't make sense to have what do y'all call yourself? Washingtonians or what do y'all
yeah, no,
whatever,
that's what
Washingtonians for the sake of this conversation, right? You don't think that it's vitally important that you have somebody from DC, right? To at least you don't got to be the quote unquote Khalifa of DC, right? But you don't think it's important for someone from DC to be there to understand that people, the less. That doesn't make rational sense to you? You send me from D.C. to Chicago, and then I'm supposed to dictate how things are going to go here in Chicago, not never being in Chicago. It don't make sense, right? So it's important for the people of Chicago to have people of knowledge, right? It's important for the people of D.C. to have people of knowledge, right? And if they can, it would be, you know, ideal for them to have somebody that's natively born, right? Meaning from those people to understand that, right? And so, and then with regards to, like I say, with regards to who is a scholar, then that's a different subject, right? But with regards to us having them,
but
I think we should.
One of the funniest things, though,
but
is that
go ahead.
When the people was first was having this conversation, it was labeled as black nationalism. Then when people were attaching people with high standing. No, well, not when people, but when scholars started calling such said individuals by the honorific title of Sheikh, it was an issue with that. But a lot of that same contingencies. Now, I saw a post where it said Fulan, Sheikh Fulan Hafizullah. I said, subhanAllah. A couple of years ago, you wouldn't have said this unless it was a scholar. This sounds like a scholar said this. So
yeah.
Eventually, once this older generation who know who people are, people with akku, so are you running up to this person and saying, yeah, Sheikh, let me ask you a question. And now you're starting to see fatwas slip out. You're starting to see a lot of little characteristics where a couple of years ago, this was only meant for the scholars. When you connect the Sheikh to Hafizullah, now we know this is from a scholar. So the babies that's raised up will be calling these people, yeah, Sheikh, Sheikh. I see. I'm just going to drop a name, and I'm not talking about this individual, but I need to make this similar to, right? Upcoming conference. I got to use my little preview voice. Upcoming conference with Sheikh Muhammad al-Maghribi, Hafizullah. Sheikh Abu Yusuf Khalifa Hafizullah and Sheikh Fauzan Hafizullah.
Man,
who's a scholar from the group?
Listen
to this. There will be a conference in DC with telelinks from Sheikh Hassan Somali, Sheikh Abu Yusuf Khalifa, and Sheikh Rabia Hafizullah. Who is the scholar and who is the da'i?
No, I get your point, right?
And I just threw the names out there just to so I won't say Sheikh Fulan, Sheikh Fulan, Sheikh, but just to hit a reality here.
I've seen a post from No, Yusuf Khalifa, with regard to not being called that, right? Simply because, and I'll pull it up. Just give me a second. I'll pull it up so I can read verbatim what the brother said. So he says, in spite of the recent graduation of many being sheikh now, I'm not from those who deserve this term, nor am I comfortable with being called a sheikh. This title of sheikh has been known here in the West to be synonymous with the word scholar or someone who is from the mashaykh of Ahl Sunnah. And I am neither of the two. Unfortunately, people who once told people why we shouldn't use the term for other than the scholars and the mashaykh are now the ones using the term for themselves and their cohorts. I don't want any parts of that. Barakallahu fikum. And that's what the brother said with that. And that's the point that you're making right there. Because if you have Sheikh Fulan and Sheikh Fulan and then Sheikh Fauzan or Sheikh Musin or whatever, right? How do you know which one is which, right? We're not going to understand that. And even if these brothers don't mean that they are scholars by using this term, what's perceived from the people are now they are
Okay, now
scholars,
hold on.
right?
So I got a question
And
for
so
you. I'm about to put you on the hot seat. I have two questions
okay.
for you, actually, and they're tied together. You ready? All right.
Okay.
So
Yep.
is Dr. Abdulrahman Al-Omeysan and Dr. Tahir Wyatt, are they scholars? Whether it's a yes or no, technically, what is a working definition of who is a scholar or what makes a person a scholar?
Okay. The short answer, yes, both of them would be considered scholars. And the reason being, their academic achievements, one, the amount of time that they spent actually learning and studying the religion upon Mashiach, and two, that you have people of knowledge who actually testify to their knowledge and their virtue and consider them scholars. So from that perspective, then yes. Now, if a person chooses not to accept them as scholars, are they necessarily wrong? I would say no. And but if a person decides to accept them as scholars, are they doing something wrong? Then I would say no. And this is why I made that point that if a person wants to talk about who is actually a scholar, then that could be discussed as well. And so
So let's
that
take
would
a
be
deep dive into that answer.
my answer or my reply to that.
And the chair is heating up. So if a person chooses not to accept them as a scholar, what Islamic-based reason? I would say Sharia, but I will say Sharia along with Islamic-based knowledge argument as to why they are not scholars. If a
Can you
person
repeat the
says
question?
that they are not scholars, is there a Sharia or Islamic thought-based
Right.
reasoning as to why they would not be considered scholars based on the answers as to why they could or should be based, should be scholars. So why wouldn't a person say that they're not scholars? That will make Islamic sense.
Only thing that I could think of would be that someone from the person that you're, so we'll just say person A doesn't accept Tahir, for example, as a scholar, right? So I would, only thing that I could think of is that person A, the people of knowledge who he trusts and he depends on, says that he's not a scholar for X, Y, and Z, right? So he doesn't accept the tazkiyah that Tahir's Mashiach may have gave him in regards to him actually being a scholar or whatnot. Right? That could be the only reason
Now
that
let's
I
go
could see.
deeper into
Outside of
that
that,
answer.
I don't know.
So, must there be a consensus or a certain amount of scholars to say that person is a scholar? Almost like a, I don't want to say a voting in, because that's too ambiguous of a term. Meaning, is there must there be a consensus of a scholar, of the scholars, of the ulama, to say, Nam, he is one of us? Or is one scholar or two scholars sufficient enough for a person to enter into that realm of knowledge. And that's not to say that every scholar does, every scholar has to accept another scholar.
No, because you, what do you, when you say a quote unquote consensus, right? Not all of the scholars gonna know a person well enough to say he is or he isn't, right? So the people that he's closest to that testify in regards to what it is that he knows of him in terms of knowledge, mannerisms, and so on and so forth, right? You kind of give them precedence over someone who may have spent lesser amount of time with him, right? So his critique of him may be because of something that he's seen, for example, on a trip. So he says, you know, such and such, he said such and such, or he acted a certain way. I wouldn't take my knowledge from a person who does such and such, right? And so if I decide to take that from that person against him, there's no, you know, wrongdoing on my part for that, even though other scholars may have said that he's a person of virtue or whatnot. It doesn't matter, right? So, like, with regards to someone, and since we're using Tahir, for example, if Tahir, for example, we know those scholars who have given him praise and said that he's from the people of knowledge and so on and so forth. If a person accepts that, alhamdulillah. If a person doesn't accept that, I think they do need a valid reason for not accepting that. But at the end of the day, it is what it is. It is what it is. So that's it.
So for me, because I've never really done a deep dive into either of the two, and it's for no particular reason.
I never listened to Tahir before. Yes, exactly. Because listen, I never came up on him, right? I never came up on him, right? The people that I listened to from the Duat here are the people that I listened to for years. You see what I'm saying? And so I don't have no stake with the guy. Like, outside of people, I would have never known who the brother was if they didn't tell me. When we was on the inside and we used to start to get the CDs and the DVDs and stuff like that, the people who knew Tahir would say, that's Tahir doing the translation.
Okay.
Or that's Mufti doing the translation. But they don't have tons of stuff not of old stuff anyway, that you would listen to or anything
but,
like that.
So what I have taken away from his detractors, though, is it can kind of be summed up in two things, two reasons. One, he's African-American. Tahir, I think Abdulrahman, I think he's from like Yemen or somewhere like this. Yemen. Right.
He's American with Yemeni descent.
In the case of Tahir,
he's American.
It's one, he's African-American, and two, how dare he be the first to accomplish this?
See, I think that's a little bit far-fetched. Huh? That he's hated on because he's African-American. Because I think he's only... Because look who it is that's actually hating on him.
I'm going back to my point, though. Remember,
African American
said that a lot of times we are the ones who have that crab in the barrel mentality, and we tear each other down a lot more. Like, how dare he think that he can do this or he can do that, and not me per se.
So what you're actually saying is that
Self-hatred.
Like amongst blacks, there's this kind of
I'm gonna say
yeah,
self-hatred.
what like I was gonna say survivor's remorse. No, self-hatred is actually what it is, right? And the reason why I was thinking of survivor's remorse is because
Right.
like once a person makes it, no, survivor remorse wouldn't be good. So we'll just go
Because
with
what?
self-hatred
Because
because the survivor's
a lot of
remorse got
times, one
more
of
to
the
do with
main
the person
characteristics of
than the people.
self-hatred
So
is that
go ahead.
you project that on others who are exactly like you. Because one of the hardest things to do is really manifest that self-hatred. So you'll hate on someone who you'll see a lot of yourself in them. I'm not saying everybody, but a lot of times that's why it's always easier to hate the like of. We hate more black people than we hate white people. We're quick to kill someone who look just like us, come from the same background, have the same struggles as us. We won't rob an other or someone else who don't have a shared experience. I remember one time I was in one of DC worst neighborhood. I'll never forget this. It blew my mind away. Gentrification, 2014. I seen it was nighttime in one of DC's worst neighborhood. Little chubby white guy, doo 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 doo, with his little tie-dye shirt and his little khaki two short shorts and his little his 300 Spartan sandals, walking one of the little teacup dog. And this guy had no care in the world. Now mind you, my head on a swivel. I walked
Right.
right through a crap game. People ain't bad at eye. They turned around and robbed the guy. That looked like he had nothing, and this white guy had a nice little gold joint that was busting across the street. And I'm sitting there like, So has
No,
some,
yeah, see,
do you think that
we
some of that
understand
has
that
crept into
dynamic.
Islam? Because a lot of our days of a lot of our jahil that we had prior to Islam has crept into our ranks.
Yeah, I do believe that self-hatred amongst African Americans is a real thing, and that it still displays itself to some degree amongst the Muslims, because you have those, despite the level of ignorance that they may have with regards to Islam, that from an a sheer appearance perspective, that a person who's of Arab, Pakistani, whatever descent may be more knowledgeable in Islam than the person who looks and comes from where they come from. I think that's a reality. Also, I believe that a lot of it. It's now mixed, or let me see how I want to say this, right? So, for example, the issue with Tahir here, on surface level, it's more Islamic based, right? In terms of why he doesn't have such favor with a large portion of the Salafis specifically, right? I think a lot of his favor, or his status with African Americans come from solely him being black and the achievements that he's achieved, right? But within the Salafi community, by and large, I don't think it has anything to do with the fact that he's black. And that's why I said earlier that when you look at a lot of the people who dislike him, they are African American. But that doesn't take away from the fact that when we're talking about on a more deeper and subconscious level, that self-hatred and things similar to that don't exist within these communities. And but then again, that still just proves our earlier point with regards to addressing these issues, right? Because that's something, that little statement that you just made about that white guy walking through the dice game, right? Unharmed. And then somebody that you would perceive, like you're a observer of this whole thing, right? You're standing across the street. So that's your vantage point. You're just watching all of this happen. You see the guy who had a nice Rolex on, for example, walk through unscathed. And then someone who comes by with a way less than that, and it's apparent he gets robbed and he gets beat up, right? That's a mentality, right? That's a way of thinking and a worldview, right? That someone from outside may not even see and pick up on, right? So take any of, only one that I think that isn't black that could speak to that and have
That's the
validity
only
with
one I
that
could think about.
is Omar Quinn, for example. And the reason why is because, at least to my knowledge, that's where he always been. It's like he's been embedded within the communities for so long that he is actually of the community from the race standpoint, where he, and even if you look at a lot of the books that he teaches from, he loves Ibn Qayyim, right? Always comes from, or a majority of the time, he comes from books from Ibn Qayyim, Rahimullah, right? And a person who reads Ibn Qayyim, one of the things that he starts to do is he starts to analyze and look at the psyche of the people, right? In terms of their hearts, right? And then we know that the heart is the king of the body, right? And the limbs are their soldiers, right? And so when you get to analyzing a person's heart, right, then you start to see why his soldiers are doing the things that they're doing, meaning their limbs and how they act and how they think and things like this, because their hearts are sick, right? And so in order for you to address the issue, you have to go to the heart of the problem, right? And so if a person isn't gonna doesn't even know how to, right? Because if you, and listen, a lot of our non-black Muslim brothers, they have some timid, they're timid with regards to this because they feel like it's not my place, right? You can say something is wrong or something is right, right?
No.
But when you're trying to go to the issue of it, am I the best one
Yeah.
for it? They won't touch it. They won't touch it. You see what I'm saying? And I'll give you, and I'll give you a real good example. I'll give you a real good example, right? We know the kind of standing that Farrakhan has amongst African Americans in general. We're not talking about Muslims specifically. We're talking about African Americans in general, right? Farrakhan is a loved individual, right? He's seen amongst the masses of African Americans as someone who's righteous, someone who's knowledgeable, right? They may not want to call themselves Muslims or whatever, but when Farrakhan speak, man, he speak with the truth. This is what a lot of the people perceive, right? And when he talks about issues that are important to black people, then black people applaud him, right? So if you was a white man and you come and you try to give them knowledge with regards to how Farrakhan has gone wrong and how he's this or how he's that, you're gonna be looked at like a hater, right? Like, this white dude is gonna talk about Farrakhan like that. It's
Right.
not gonna be accepted from you, even though what you're saying is true, right? But now, we'll just take me for an example. Say I come to you and I say, nah, man, I mean, that sounded good, but Farrakhan was wrong on this point, and Farrakhan was wrong on that point. And how he gonna say this about the white man
Right.
when his teacher was a white man, and this and that, and this and that? It'll be more received, right?
Right.
Because I don't look like a person from the outside trying to come in and destroy your black leaders,
Right.
right? That's from a psychological standpoint, right? Why is it important that you have people that look like you? When you're a people that's
Right.
always had somebody that wasn't like you, that was always trying to push you down. So that's, that's just an example, right, of why it's important that you
Right.
have those people of
Right.
knowledge that
And let
come
me
from these
also
communities like you.
say this in respect to our white brothers over here. One, it would be nice just to have an American scholar, period, who understand the dynamics of the different demographics as it relates to race relations. Because a lot of our white brothers, I don't know of too many American white Masajid, so they kind of. So when I say an African American, I'm talking about someone that's community based, like you said, Umar Quinn, how about it? And from amongst the newer duats, he's one of my favorites, because he speaks. Whenever he decides to address community issues, he
Right.
does it in a realistic approach and way, not theoretical. He gives you examples that are relatable. He gives you a mindset that is relatable. It's not weird and awkward like someone who just really don't understand what they're doing. But he has a he knows what he knows, and he knows when he get up there and talk, he's probably one of the most thoughtful da'is. You can literally see him thinking as he's speaking. He doesn't just, oh, this gonna sound slick, so I'm gonna hit this. But like you said, though, a lot of that came from the grooming of one Abu Uwais and his profound love for teaching from the works of Ibn Qayyim, which, as you stated, not only do he deal with the psyche of the people, but he also deals with the heart. The before we get to the actions, let's address the heart and the intentions and the thought behind the why we the okay, we're doing this, but why are we doing this? He's really deep, reflective, meditative. Ibn Qayyim, hands down, one of my favorite, who when I read him, he goes in. But it's something that's needed, and it's something that needs to be addressed, or even if not a scholar, then to have imams to not ignore community issues as if none of this stuff is happening around him at all. And you spoke about Furkan, which I mean it is what his belief system and stuff, it is what it is. I feel like it's 2020. It's no need to even. We know what that is all about as Ahlus Sunnah wal Jama'ah. But I think another thing that we kind of fail to do, and we fall into the trick bag, is that
No.
we fail to recognize when others might be onto something and doing something well. I
And see,
think,
with that,
yeah.
again, I think that's an American issue. It is. See, the reason why you don't have an American scholar, right? especially amongst the Salafis, because they don't accept them, right? That's the difference between in a Somali community, for example. Yeah. They respect, at least from my vantage point, they respect their people of knowledge, right? So if a person comes and he's went off and he's did his doctorate degree and he comes back, they respect him as a person of knowledge, right? So here, for example, someone goes off and they study and they come back
because
they're not accepted by and large as the people of knowledge.
Okay.
You
I
see
think
what
that's
I'm saying?
In large part
and so,
because the people
therefore
who are
I'm listening
in charge of these platforms and I'm saying the minbar. I could not remember that word last episode to save my life. And I'm saying minbar is a platform. When I mean a platform, meaning that you're in a place where you can influence people with your words. So whether it's on via social media, via the minbar, via whatever outlet that you have to speak to masses or at least two groups of people, that they're not accepting it. And therefore, they're taking their not accepting it and making the people not accept it. And if you do accept it, then there is no excuse. Like I said, a lot of the people may not even know who Tahir was. I didn't know he was here, back, anywhere, because at that time, Tahir Wyatt wasn't even on my conscious brain. I may not even have known exactly who he was, but you went into a whole deep dive about him so viciously that I was at the time, I was just like, oh, mashallah, alhamdulillah, yeah, that brother, oh man, oh, he said what? He said this black scholarship in America, what does he mean? I mean, oh man, he wrong. And they had the little clip, the, you know, they famous for the one clip, the six liners, and then Arabic come on, yeah, Habibi. And then they'll go into this whole refutation, our refutation based on two or three lines, where for some reason I went back and listened to the whole thing to put what he said in proper context. What he said is, hey, yeah, nah, it's black scholarship over here so much as we don't need to go and ask the scholars about things like voodoo or Salat when you have brothers who went overseas to study those things to come back and address those needs to the people. So you don't need to go to the scholars over trivial thing that people have spent 5, 10, 15, 20 years learning, have a degree in. The scholar said, nah, go forth into the world. That's what they're here for. So basically, within that little sentence and that little clip sounded really, really bad, or you know, it was a condemning statement. But once you go back and listen to it in its entirety, going to what he said before and what he said after, it makes sense. Why sit down and send an email to Sheikh Rabia account when if Kashif Khan is a student of knowledge or a da'i, why can't I just ask him about wudu?
But yeah, but see, as the brother he pointed out in the post that we read, once upon a time it was that they're trying to connect people with the ulama. So if anybody else came in and said contrary, then they were trying to disconnect the people from the ulama, right?
Honestly speaking.
But again, as I just that.
Are the people really connected to the, how are we connected to the scholars? I mean,
see, that's a different conversation, right? That's a whole nother different conversation. And, I mean, and if you want to address it in another episode, then we can go down that rabbit hole. So before it gets too late, it was another post that I said I wanted to talk about. And This one is kind of deep if I can find it. Let me find it. Let me find it. I just had it pulled up. And so, yeah, inshallah, we'll jump on that. All right, so the brother, he says, I once read a magazine and there was a question posed, and it asked, when will the Muslims portray a true Islamic society again? It went on to say that between the death of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam and now, we have lost the true meaning of Islam. So my question to the Facebook woman is, do you think that is a true statement? And if so, what can we do to change it? And I had one of the comments from there, but I can't seem to find it. Where the brother made a statement about returning to the caliphate and all of that stuff. And so that's kind of really what I wanted to touch on was that returning back to the caliphate part.
Nah.
And so I think, inshallah,
that's a deep deep dive.
We'll do that in another episode because I want to have that with me. Yeah, and so that way I can, because I got the Dalil with regards to, but I want to have the statement of the brother. So I'll just go back and find that as well. So yeah, inshallah, in our upcoming episodes, we'll talk about are the people actually connected to the scholars, and we'll talk about
A trilogy.
Whether there'll be an Islamic society again, and so on and so forth. Because even with that, the question with regards to Islamic society and stuff like this, you have to actually look at the people who say that certain lands, for example, like Saudi Arabia, for example, aren't Islamic lands. And you have to look at their mindsets, right? And then you don't even have to do a deep dive. But once you go beyond the surface, you exactly. see that these people have with them a bunch of deviated beliefs and so on and so forth. Because whenever you look at the people who consider certain governments, especially Muslim governments, to be tawgut and things like this,
I wouldn't even have her even.
You know, you're going down. A lizard.
My initial thoughts on that question. We could take a deep dive in it. What is your community like?
Yeah. No, but that's what I'm saying, man. Like, when you actually look at those kind of individuals, man, because
they probably
listen. There's always gonna
probably
be
what they say, madhhaliism. Usually.
Mm-hmm. And that's why I think you have to, when you look into the psyche of these people. Like, even if you really wanted to take an honest look at it, right? Then you would have to go to, like, was this how the Messenger of Allah said it would be, right? Are these people actually going, like, is this against the Sunnah, for example? That you have a king, for example? Because they say, some people say you're not supposed to have a king, right? You're only supposed to have Khalifa and so on and so forth like this. But is your way of thinking actually in accordance to the Sunnah or no? Right? And so Yeah, those things got to be looked at and put into perspective and things like that. But oftentimes you find that there's just a bunch of ignorant people that are just following ignorant trends, man. So now this was a good discussion, man.
The
And
trilogy.
now so I can't wait to we jumping off into these other the trilogy. Now we jump off into that.
I see
It
that
was
thing.
something
I'm
else,
at
man.
what
I've
you
been
sent me
working
the
on the
other day. Take a
website,
look
man.
at it, man. That thing was, I was like,
Trying to get
okay,
that up and
look at
running,
my,
man.
did you get a chance to check out Reem little, man, Reem sent me a little video where he did some editing on that joint. I was like, and he was, oh, I was like, I was laughing because he was like, and the brothers killing one another. Yeah.
He got
He was off it. He was off his
he got
old.
three of them up so far, man. I
He was
watched
off his
all of them. He sent me a
show, man.
message
I was like,
earlier,
okay, my man done been slamming his
where
joint.
he has the actual, yeah. Yeah, he got the actual documentary up now. That was the last thing that he sent me for the actual doc. So I'll check that out later.
Wow, I like him so
Now,
much.
so
I'm
we'll
so
just go ahead
glad
and
you're a
end here,
brother
man.
too.
And so until our next episode.